This episode is sponsored by Hacksoft, your Django development partner beyond code. More on their services later in the show. Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hey, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we're very pleased to welcome back Natalia Bidart, Django Fellow and Release Manager for Django 6.0. Welcome, Natalia.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
No, thank you for coming on.
Well, I feel honored that I'm on with the Release Manager and then also the author, co-author of one of the major features, which is template partials, which we'll talk about. And then I'm here just emceeing it all. So we'll start with, how are you doing, Natalia? Because maybe people don't know, but as a Django fellow, it's a lot of work to do a release. Could you speak a bit about what that process is like? Is there follow-up work you have to do after a major release comes out?
Well, how am I? I am very tired because it's December. So, you know, I'm not sure if it is psychological or if it is like a real thing, like you feel the whole year being on your shoulders. And in the South Hemisphere, the year matches the school year. So we have a full school year in our shoulders as well. And holidays are starting this Friday, actually. So there is a lot going on. So last week, at the time of this episode, we got two big Django releases, not major. And this Friday, we're having like a release of first grade from my daughter. So that's also like a big event. And then everything is entangled right now in my head and in my tiredness. But focusing on the Django releases, you asked me about the feature release for 6.0 and what it takes.
Yes.
So Django has a release cadence of feature release is what we call it, every 8 months. So we have this, we got the 5.2 on April this year, 2025. And 8 months later, we got 6.0, which is the release that I made almost a week ago. During those 8 months, the things that happens are feature development, which takes approximately 6 months, and then, or a little bit less, 5 months maybe. And then we have a feature freeze that happened on September this year. On feature freeze, we no longer add features to what is going to be the 6.0 release. To do that, we do what we call, we cut the stable branch. So all the feature development between April and September happened in the main branch, in the Django main branch. We landed all the things, documentation, features, backward incompatible changes if we have to with the deprecation path and those things. On September, I branched from main and stable branch, and that was the freeze of the features. And since then, we got the, I made an alpha release along with the feature freeze, and that went out for people to ideally start early testing for 6.0. We got a month between the alpha and the beta release. I'm not sure what's the right pronunciation.
Oh, that depends which side of the Atlantic you're on.
Okay. So we got a month between alpha and beta. And during that time, we will encourage early testing and we will try to track all the main bugs with the features, the new features that we have released. I did the beta release mid-October, and then we got another month until the release candidate, which was around mid-November. At that time, we also do what we call a string freeze. All the strings that are shipped with Django, inside Django, so you know all the messages that you see in the admin, in the validators, and in different parts of the Django framework, not the docs, the framework itself, we do a freeze and we no longer allow for changes to be made to those strings. Because in mid-November, we call for translations, for translators to go to the site where we have the available strings to translate, and we encourage them to do translations. So that was during 2 weeks. And a few days before the final release, I fetch all the translations from this website and I incorporate it into what I released as the final version. So the Angle 6.0 final included not only the features and hopefully most of the bug fixes, but also included the latest translations for the strings that we change between 5.2 and 6.0. I can go into deeper details, but maybe that's not where we want to go to.
Well, the take home there is that there's quite a lot of work involved, right? So you're just spending basically three months in putting together the final release, even after all the development that's gone on. It's not a trivial process.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, one non-trivial burden is to remember at which stage we are in, when the next release is happening. I have tons of reminders in my calendar not to miss a release date, because every day you start your fellow day is like you have security reports, you have bugs to try it, you have PRs to review, you have messages, you have meetings, and you may also have releases. So my main fear is to forget a release day, basically.
Yeah. Right. Imagine you're just halfway through the morning and it's like, hang on, isn't the alpha going out today? Ah!
Well, this is like any big project, right? Like I've seen that some people, they'll take what they call book leave when they want to, you know, write a book, and they just stop everything for months at a time. And that sounds like a nice indulgence. You should have like feature freeze or, you know, major release leave, right? It's just like, don't distract Natalia. Or whoever, you know, or Jacob, you know, they're busy, if only.
I might consider that idea. I mean, but for what it's worth, and in recognition to the other fellows, Sarah and Jacob, they are very mindful of this and they have been very supportive. And I have been openly saying my focus right now is the feature freeze or the beta release or whichever. And I have been putting things or suggesting the things to be on other people's plate, and I've been focusing on release. So that's sort of already there. And it's also a necessity, because if we want clean releases, we need to focus and prioritize that.
Well, and this is also why we have multiple fellows, right? Carlton, I recall there was a time where you were almost solo, purely solo, you know, way back.
No, in the day. Not really. I think...
I thought there was a handoff period, which...
Maybe a short period. Marriage came...
Before marriage came on.
Around the time Tim stepped back. So it wasn't too... There wasn't too long a period. Okay.
That's true. Tim was still helping for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, and Tim would pop his head up a year and a half later and be like, oh, you forgot to do X particular thing, which was always okay. Very... He was always watching closely.
Well, let's dive right in.
Hang on. You said something there about the testing. You said two things. You said, first of all, ideally, people would start testing around the alpha. And then later on in your description, you said, we encourage early testing. How does that go? Do we getting enough people to pick it up and give it a run?
I don't want to be mean, but I will say no. I feel that we don't have enough people testing. I'm not blaming anyone. And actually, I think that we should perhaps consider doing a different job or focusing some efforts into better advertising or better encouraging of early testing.
Testing team. We need another team on the team's page.
I don't want to say a working group, because I think that's too much. But maybe there might be individuals who find rewarding, you know, or exciting to find issues in early versions. And I think we could benefit from those. I mean, just today I saw a new ticket that is about CSP and how we might have missed an integration with something, with the assets objects, which I'm not very familiar with. So I need to investigate a little bit before finalizing the triage. And I was wondering, I wish we have had this feedback earlier. And even in the PR, this PR was open for so long and we tried to advertise. Is the steering council actively reached out asking for, is there something that you want us to advertise for getting more eyes on? And they did publish a post regarding CSP and encouraging people with some domain knowledge to go to the PR or to test it when it was already in the alpha release. I don't know. I wish we had more people doing that, the testing, that exercising. I'm not sure what we can do about it. Do you have ideas?
I've got a long-standing sort of one that I've just never really done anything with, is that if we had an example toxconfig, say, which just says, look, here's how you can test in Django standard testing docs, here's how you can test your existing Django project, your existing Django version with a toxconfig. Really simple one. It doesn't have to be like, you know, 8 versions of Python and all the rest. It can just be like your current version of Python, maybe the next version of Python, plus your current version of Django. And then if you want to just an example of how you do the pretesting, you add this line to your toxconfig and you can run your test suite against the upcoming Django. And I think if we could just smooth the part, I think a lot of people just don't know how to do it. There was a post this week from Seth, surname escapes me momentarily, who's the Python security
Seth Larson, he
also maintains URL lib3, and they've had a deprecation warning in there for about 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, and they finally took it out and they broke everything and they had to put it back in again. It's like he's did a post about how deprecation warnings don't work, and we have the same problem in Django. Is we've got a really good deprecation process, and we've got this pending deprecation warnings, and we've got these deprecation warnings, and then we'll remove it the second release later, and then there'll be the final release will come, not the pre-releases. The final release will come and someone pops up on the forum with, oh, you've broken my workflow with this breaking change. It's like we've been warning you about this breaking change for the entire last cycle. But people don't know how to run with warnings. We should show them more, is my thought.
I have a second add-on take. So I agree the how, but also, I mean, Django has a marketing problem. So does Python. Like, we don't have a newsletter. You know, we don't have email capture. I can say this because there's this Django News newsletter that reaches, you know, almost 5,000 people, but there's 5 million people or something that use Django. So I think we need both nice steps, but also I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that people that listen to this podcast, read the newsletter, are on LinkedIn or on X, represent anything more than 0.1% of
our
users. So,
go on, then. There's two hot takes there, Natalia. What do you think?
Well, I mean, she's going to agree, I think.
Are you pressuring me to agree?
Hey, yeah, no, obviously, you have to agree.
What wisdom,
fine old gentlemen have given us.
It would be interesting if you disagreed,
actually. Well, I think there are two parts disconnecting in a way, because the first thing that I thought where you were speaking, Will, is that What we really need is a video from Will showing how to test early, because I mean, Carlton was saying people doesn't know how to do it, and I've heard requests from people saying we want videos explaining things and we don't want to read. That might be a generational thing, which I really don't know. I've been struggling personally.
It absolutely is.
What?
It absolutely is the generational thing.
Yeah. I mean.
Well, Sarah's young. When Sarah comes back, we can have her do it. She's
you're the
good
one that is here now, and you're the one with all the equipment, and you're the one.
Yeah. No, I don't. Anyway. I don't want to put. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm writing it down, and 2026 is like video year. So I agree. People need a video. Even me, I've gotten
one,
stupider.
It doesn't have to be generic, just saying, I have this thing that I support or that I maintain, and this is how I do to try and other versions of Django with my project. Not even, I mean, alpha releases, but maybe other versions or other Pythons or things. I think that could be useful. And also, I think that we should ideally advertise that a little bit more within the Django website. I'm not sure the reach that we have in the website. I honestly don't know. If we think that we have enough reach via the DjangoProject.com website, I think that we could evaluate doing more of what the current steering council is doing into putting some pages acting as a hub to summarize good content and packages, and maybe we can also start summarizing resources and making some how-tos more engaging and prominent. I think that will be one step forward. And then, but then there is this thing that I ponder on every day, the generational thing, the how to do things. I'm not sure if the youth, maybe I don't want to just think about age, but I'm struggling with ticket reports, security reports, PR things, where I feel, and I will try not to be judgmental, but I feel like people do not read. They just throw things together, usually via an LLM or something in between. But even if it, I mean, I'm not sure how to address that, how people not reading maybe the deprecation warning or docs or how to, I don't know.
It's a bit like publishing a blog post. It's like you can write a blog post and you can read it 100 times and you'll think, yeah, I've got all the typos. And then you can hit publish and you can load it up in your browser and then you will spot the typo that you've missed. And then you'll fix that and then you'll reload it and then you'll spot another typo that you've missed. And there's no way that you can spot, it's physically, gnomically not possible that you could catch those typos until you've hit publish. So maybe it's the same with software releases. You just have to let it out and then wait for the reissues to come in.
Well, I think it's also easier than ever to, you know, send something to a Django fellow or the Django community with the help of an LLM or other resources. Whereas, you know, it's almost, I mean, this is not a new issue, but AI slop or AI assisted slop. So, I mean, until you've had to be on the receiving end of this, I think it's hard to appreciate what it's like, right? To get requests from people who haven't fully read this
yeah,
or that.
Yeah, it's exhausting. But if we want to focus on the positive, maybe, I mean, if there is a positive use that we can take from the LLMs into help with the alpha testing, early testing, or encouraging people, or I don't know, can we train them on the side to recommend 6.0 in early staging? I don't know. I'm open to ideas, though.
I have a feeling as well that they are opening opportunities for people to partake that were never there before, because without these tools, people couldn't contribute in any way. And so maybe the new contributions overworked maintainers were struggling to deal with them. But I don't want to say, oh no, you mustn't use such tools, because that's just a kind of, oh well, you know, only the existing contributors please type gatekeeping. There's a word for that, gatekeeping. I worry that if we're too anti, that we're not letting the new flowers bloom. I don't know.
Well, I've added a note, Natalia. I will work on a video for that for next year. Videos is my focus as much as I can for next year.
Thank you.
Could we talk about the features in 6.0?
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Okay. So, well, Natalia, you speak in paragraphs. We will link to the release notes. What would you say are the major features people should be aware of?
Okay, so I highlighted those in the release note or in the blog post, but since we have agreed that a lot of people do not read, let's just go over. So one feature that is very famous and people have been mentioning in keynotes or in conferences is, of course, template partials, which originally created by Carlton and brought to the Django core in the context of Google Summer of Code with Farhan as an executor and Carlton as a mentor. That has been great. I think that having that within core and having a clean way of defining the fragments of your templates that you want to reuse allows for much well-finished designs and a cleaner layout of your templates. I have been using it in another project and I'm very, very in love, I will say, with how you can define the pieces in your templates. My only concern, this is a personal concern, is discoverability, how you can, in a way, have an index of what partials do you have and where are those when you need to reuse it at a different way of finding those other than using rep. But other than that, I think that's great. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to jump in. So I'm obviously enamored too. So it's really nice to see it go to. So, you know, I started my new project and I read Carson's essay on the HTMX website about template fragments. And I was like, okay, I need that for Django. And so I sat down and wrote it and then talked about it in DjangoCon Europe in Edinburgh. And it was a good take up and everyone was pleased. And there was the inline argument where you can define the partial and output it at the same time. That was added very early and there was a few like tweaks found. But then after that, it very quickly stabilized and, you know, it wasn't like there was a continual drip of new features. And so that was lovely. And then to have it merged into core is just like, oh, well, that's lovely. That's you know, it's really rewarding and it gives me a nice little warm feeling. And Farhan was amazing. The bottom line is I was looking through my Django checkout the other day and I've got a branch from template partials that I started against, I don't know, 5.0 and I didn't get it done. So I rebased it against 5.1. I didn't get it done. It was never going to happen because it just took too much time and too much effort to bring it up from, yeah, this is a fine third party package to this is Django quality for me to commit the time. So the Google Summer of Code project was exactly what was needed to add to give it the momentum to get it actually into core.
I would just add, he's still doing excellent, excellent work around Django. I'll just shout out to his Django Bolt project, which is Rust-powered API framework, but he's doing lots of interesting stuff. And this is like, you know, you suck people in. You're like, Google Summer of Code, get a feature in, and then hopefully they stay.
Is a young dynamo. Like he's got the Django Bolt project, which is like really interesting Rust-based thing. And he's got a nice API example called Django Rapid, which is just Python, but it's using message spec to do serialization and comparing that to, say, DRF type approaches. It's, you know, nice and quick. And just using that, you get kind of fast API type performance, showing that the issue is the serialization layer rather than the request response cycle, which is kind of cute. And then he's built also a in-browser Django REPL environment.
Oh, Django REPL.
You can define your project. You can create a. So he's got a WASM-based SQLite there. You can define your models, define your migrations, run your migrations, and run the whole project all in your browser. And it's just kind of really cool and the sort of thing that, you know, only a youngster
with new.
Infinite free time and energy could possibly
produce. Well, and I'm getting. I mean, Carlton, we can sit on our old man laurels. I'm getting flashbacks to Sage when he, I believe, did a Google Summer of Code, and then, you know, now he's Wagtail core team and doing lots of stuff. And so there's a feeling of, I had nothing to do with either of them. You did with both. This is how it should be, right? Like you bring people in who are smart and eager and have new perspectives and they, you know, enrich the ecosystem, I would say.
Hacksoft is your development partner beyond code. From custom software development to consulting, team augmentation, or opening an office in Bulgaria, they're ready to take your project to the next level.
That's a great definition. And I actually think that it matches the other contributors that we have had that have also helped and drove major features to 6.0. We also have CSP, content security policy integration, landed in 6.0. That work was led by Rob Hudson. He is the maintainer of the third-party package Django CSP. And we took like the core of that and made it Django quality, like you just said, Carlon, and that's currently for everyone to try out. And I'm sure if you use it in your projects.
Yes, I do. I think it's a great thing. It's one of those things that I think it really belongs in Django itself. It's sort of difficult. It's complex. I think there was a period where the third party package had been maintained for a long time. But I think there was a brief period where it was kind of in this unmaintained limbo. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure that happened. And it's like, hang on, this is an important security feature. It's, you know, it's not some, I don't know, custom field bolt-in that only a few people need. This is something that should be available, and it needs those kind of, I don't know, that just that extra guarantee that being in Django itself provides. And I think to have it merged is like, yeah, no, that's good for the long-term stability, the long-term assurance. It plays into our security record. It plays into, you know, Django's story about being a strong, solid foundation you can rely on. I think for all of those reasons, to have it merged into core is exciting and good and worthwhile. And, you know, if people want to get started, you can just set it up to do the reporting bit to begin with. And that's a lovely way to just begin, and you get the errors in your browser and it's okay, yeah, now I can fix them, and then you can turn it on for real.
Just a little clarification for people listening. The reporting part, it's non-invasive, and you can define a CSP policy for your website with some basic configuration, which is usually safe and not too restrictive. And you will get reporting of the potential violations that your website might have when it comes to different assets usage. And I think that's very enlightening and can help tighten the security of any site.
Yeah, and it's you want to use that first if you're unsure, because if your CSP policy is too tight, resources you need just won't load, and then your website will break. So it's worth being sure you've got it right, and then turning it on for real. But it's a really nice defense in depth measure. You know, if you've got a template escaping on and you filter all user import, and you shouldn't have cross-site scripting things. But to be able to say, do you know what, I'm only loading resources from my own site or from this particular one other site, or whatever your CSP policy is, it just tightens all the screws, makes you just that little bit harder to have an exploit. So I'm really excited by it.
Yep, nothing for me to add.
I just agree, and I'm as you're talking, I'm currently actually for real working on the Django for Professionals book 6.0 update.
Okay.
For real. And I was just making notes on like, yep, need to make sure I paraphrase.
CSP. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, it's always just figuring out the level at which I want to introduce things, right? Because people read the books, hopefully to get a curated opinionated take. And so I want to figure out what do I think is bare minimum you should do. And then what is extra? And so that's always what takes some discernment. Carlton, did you have a thought there?
Yeah, I just going to say CSP is definitely a professional's level.
Oh, yeah, feature. You should have it, but like how much?
You don't need it as a beginner site.
I'm going to include it for sure, probably I'll do something like...
That's not what I meant. I meant you don't want to put it in the beginner's book.
Yeah.
It's too... Like it's something that a beginner doesn't need to know.
No, for sure. The third major feature is background tasks that Jake Howard led the development of. Do you want to... Or can you speak to that, Natalia?
Oh, yeah. That was an amazing work led by Jake, as you said. But also, it was a very rewarding interaction with Jake. He's very easy to work with. He's very attentive to details. He's very thorough. And he has been iterating over the PR for a long time. I mean, he started work before 5.2, yes. And he has been just pushing and updating things and reacting to review comments when they come, because in the first stages, we wouldn't iterate that quickly. We did iterate it quickly when we approached the 6.0 feature fees. And he's just great to work with. I'm very thankful for having met him and having gone through that process with him. And the quality of the work that he has shared, done, and landed now in Django Core is great. So I think that one note that is important to share with the audience is that there has been some recent confusion about what is the background task that we have shipped with Django. And I wanted to share that's the definition of an API, sort of like in a generic way of a background task worker engine to plug into Django in a way that you could, if you need to, either replace that engine or even have different engines in different setups of your project. And Django background tasks will define how they should speak with the framework. There is a way to defining the tasks, to defining how a task is enqueued, how a task result is inspected, and, well, a few other bits. There are, of course, settings for your project to define which background to use with which different options and a few other bits.
Yeah, so for right now, it's it's not a development ready thing in and of itself. You still need to use third-party tools, but it's a new way that the third-party tools can probably link in going forward. Yes, Carlton?
Well, but, and this ties into what Natalia's saying, the third-party backend is there, DjangoTaskDB.
Yeah.
Or, what's it called? DjangoTaskDB is there.
DjangoTask,
you just pip-install that alongside, and you're ready to go. And I think... I've seen read a few blog posts, and they've got this like paragraph about how it's not really got a back time task. It's like, no, that I think we just phrased this wrong somehow. Is that, yeah, look, to get going, just use Jake's backend that he's been working on, that he's developed with this the API contract here. And it's the API contract bit that's in Django, as Natalia's saying. And yes, you need to install the extra package to go with it, but the point is that the API allows you to use Celery, or you know, if somebody wrote an adapter, you could use Celery or Django Q2 or Jake's one, or you know, whatever package that's out there. I think when I read a couple of the blog posts, I was like, hang on, we've got the messaging slightly wrong here. It's not that it's not production ready; it really is. Just use, you know, DB Tasks as the background worker, and you're there.
Well, but that's an opinionated take, right? I mean, that
yeah, but we should give people opinions. We should be like, look.
So you think I should recommend Django Tasks as the way to do it alongside the new API? Because that's a question for me. Like, because I haven't technically, and sorry to make this, you know, I'm sort of partial to Django Q2, but I don't do a ton with tasks. This is an open question for me, is right? I'm going to introduce, here's the thing, you can use it locally, but for production, should I make a recommendation or?
The way I would phrase it, sorry to decide, let me just answer Will's question directly, then you jump in and tell us what you think. But The way I would explain it to anybody is: look, there's this new task framework. There's an API, and there's a worker in implementation for it. That's the default recommended worker implementation. And then the great thing is that any other queue system can adopt the API interface, and then that will be pluggable into any third party app that wants to use tasks or any project that wants to use tasks. In a generic way, the same as the database backends are. But the messaging seems to be, oh, there's no backend. It's like, no, there is a backend. Jake spent, you know, an absolute age developing it. Go on, Natalia.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention that, yes, Jake developed the database backend, which will store the metadata for your tasks in the database. I don't have clarity whether that's production ready when it comes to retries and robustness and atomicity and a few of the bits. It might be since the last time that I checked. But I do know that I believe RQ2 is already listed in Django Task, and there is at least a shim that allows you to work with it using the new API. And I also know that there is an in-progress PR for Django Task to have a shim to use Celery as well. That might need some updates, but I know it's there. So, and also about recommendation, Will, I think that different projects might need different queues, because the different queues might have slightly different either focus or performance, whether you may have a gazillion messages and not that many queues, or you will have a gazillion queues and not that many messages for whatever reasons. It also depends on your infrastructure, whether you want to prioritize resource consumption or velocity, or you might need an absolutely bulletproof retry mechanism, or you can miss some of the packages, let's say. So I guess it's only fair to ask for projects to evaluate which actual backend they need for their domain of the project. There might have been a misunderstanding. When you were saying that, Carlton, I was thinking over and over, people do not read, because if you read the documentation it will say, I mean...
We've established this.
It said all over the place, we have ref docs for tasks. We have a topics page for tasks. We have the settings and the release note. In every one of those, we said that in this release, we were providing the immediate and the dummy backend that were only for development and testing purposes. And it is true that we didn't say if you want a production ready backend, you should go to this place. We didn't say that. We made some improvement to the docs, like we reiterated this concept, and we linked to the ecosystem page, the new one that the steering council created, so people will have perhaps more clarity on the current status. But yeah, I mean, definitely we're open to improvements, and we are also open to eventually merging the, or seriously evaluate merging the database backend into Django Core. I think that will be a good addition.
Preliminarily, we could just have a pip extra, where it's like an official sort of, you know, pip install Django with task backend or something. But I'm excited about the task thing. Like Jake presented it, I don't know, back in the day. We were in...
Yeah, where was that?
Where
was
were
it?
We?
Was that in...
Galicia,
we
were
Dublin,
in
or Vigo.
Vigo, yes, we're in Vigo.
Yes,
and he got I missed it.
You know, he gave this great talk about how, you know, if you're particularly if you're developing a third-party package, how without tying yourself to one particular queue backend, and there are like 50. You know, if you were to go onto Mastodon, you would say, "Oh, what Django queuing backend tasks do you use?" You'd get a different answer from every person who replied. And that's fine, and that's great, and that's the Django way, and that's wonderful. But if you're developing a third-party backend or a third-party app and you want to use background tasks, you didn't have a common API you could lean into, and now you do. And that's a major step forward. I think it's going to be brilliant as that matures, regardless of which particular backend you use.
Yeah, and I think it, for me as an author, it makes it easier to introduce tasks because I can go to the built-in option, you can try it locally. I don't have to cover Celery to cover queues and tasks for someone, right? To make an exaggerated point. So
you may even have a divide and conquer strategy within your engineering team, because you may have a Celery expert, for example, but you may have a team of, I don't know, 5 engineers that are very skilled in Django and Python. They might just use the immediate or dummy backend for development. And you might just focus on your specific background worker runner at some later point, or with a specialized person.
Yeah, and this is something I think that Django, and I can't say it's unique among web frameworks, but it feels like so much is optimized around one developer can do so much with Django. You can have queues, you can do CSP policy, you can do a lot of things that sometimes a team would be required, you know, HTMX, template partials. You can get an interactive website solo so much more easily than you could in the past. And it feels anecdotally to me that some other web frameworks are more focused on, I don't know, maybe what like a big client or a big website needs, as opposed to Django really is focused on like you solo can have production ready internet scale site more or less. And there's still these areas like if you need crazy Celery or what have you, but just the built-in power of Django is a lot. I don't know. Does that make sense? I just feel like I don't always see other web frameworks as focused on what a solo developer can do as opposed to what the broader community of teams that have front end and back end need. What to say? Nothing to say. I left everyone speechless with that.
Yeah. There is one more set of features that I want to highlight for CC.0, because the work made by Mike Edmonds was amazing and is really worth calling out. He has done a set of improvements in everything that is email related. There was a big branch modernizing all the email API using Django. He changed all the underlying in the fundamental layer below the API that Django provides, and change everything to use more modern APIs from Python itself. But in order to complete that branch, Mike made a series of other improvements when it comes to how we handle Unicode for domains, when it comes to URLs or email domains. He also made an amazing work in order to be able to generalize a decorator so we can deprecate more easily signatures of public methods or public functions. So we have this strict policy in how we handle backward incompatible changes. And it's often the case where we want to change a given signature. And more often is the case where we want to make some not name arguments to be only allowed to be passed as a name argument. He provided a decorator to make that transition and that deprecation more robust and reusable. And I think that was an effort that was so focused and well spent. And I'm very thankful for how he approached that, because he was really thinking about maintainers, the maintainer work, and what we go through when we need to handle those cases. He was very easy to work with, and I appreciate a lot his contribution.
Yeah, no, yeah, he spent an awful lot of time digging into the details of things, which are very obscure, and like the, you know, the different Unicode versions and whatnot. And that work is sort of unglamorous in a way, but it, you know, necessary to excavate. Okay, how do we make this change? And so, you know, absolutely what you just said.
Yeah, from the, exactly that, and from the point of view of the release manager, which happens to be me. I felt so contained and so supported by his work. And I really think it's worth calling that out, because while the fellows have this, you know, title and we might be in this pedestal from point of view of other people, sometimes we don't know what we're doing, or we don't know for some areas of the angle. We don't have the expertise to go deep or to make decisions about, yes, let's go this way, or let's remove this or add this. Having people with the domain knowledge and with the patience and the care to explain a concept, to provide rationale, to provide side information, a thorough analysis of how they are reaching the conclusion they are reaching, and how they are going into or advising in one direction and another one, give us the maintainers and the people that is making decision, it removes stress from us, or at least it did for me. So I think that's very, very needed and valuable.
Yeah, because it's worth saying that the code is almost the least of it. There's, if people go in and look at the discussions, there's a lot of discussion, as you said, education and everything else, yes, that goes into it. So you can't just drop perfect code and be done with it. It's a small percentage of what's required.
And I think that applies, for all the headline features that I highlighted, because I learned a lot from all of them. Like CSP, I don't even know it existed. The insights of the template rendering engine, I never looked into it until Template Bytecharts. And Bagrat Task, I also learned a lot, because I've been using Celery, but I never really dig deep into what it really means to have Task and what it needs to run.
Well, I just had one thought, Carlton. Is there anything you wanted to slip in on 6.0?
No, not really. It's just another solid, incremental change. Like, you know, every single release, I always say this, every single release, like 5.0, amazing. 5.1, amazing. 5.2, amazing. 6.0, amazing. It's just like, it does keep coming. And, you know, people are like, well, why still Django? You're like, well, have you looked at the release notes recently?
I mean, and things don't break. I mean, yeah, no news is good news. I mean, at PyCharm, we just released a version, and every time we release something, for a variety of reasons, there's stuff that emerges. The amount of things that need to be fixed is so small for something as important as Django. I mean, it's pretty phenomenal. But my question was, Natalia, even though 6.0 came out, 6.1 continues apace. Is there anything you want to say on that? Is Jake the release manager for that? I don't know, actually.
Yes. So 6.1 started official development when we did the cut of the 6.0 stable branch. So 6.1 has been in the kitchen since September this year. And the fellows tried to take turns for being release manager of the different feature versions. So Sarah did 5.2, I did 6.0, and we have kindly invited / obliged Jacob to be release manager for 6.1. he will be in charge of the feature freeze, the alpha release of this, and the subsequent releases. I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, I'll put a link. You can see the 6.1 release notes under development. So August 2026, and there's some features that may make it around model field fetch modes, database level delete options, and other things. But yeah, it's relentless, right? The train just keeps on chugging. Even though you want to take a pause and celebrate and deal with 6.0 issues, it's like, nope, here comes 6.1.
Yeah, and it's a little bit, you know, scary as well, because I just got the feature freeze and 6.1 development starts. So I personally wasn't able to pay attention to 6.1 development. Jacob has done that, very focused, which is great. And it's also another thing that provides me peace of mind. But it never stops. And maybe a talk for another time, but I'm very curious on the Culver proposal that you have, Carlton, because I think that will help with this feeling of overwhelming, at least that I have. But yeah, maybe we can discuss
it. Can we quickly give the pitch for that, Carlton? We can end on that.
Yeah, so the basic idea is to move to an annual release cycle. And the main motivation is to tie in better with Python's annual release cycle, which since 3.9 is every year. And the issue is that there are any given time, there are five live versions of Python now. So I think Python 3.10 is the lowest and Python 3.14 is the highest. So there's five whole versions there. And Django's release cycle was created before Python switched to that cycle. And so the versions that, so 5.2 is still supporting Python 3.8, which is been end of life for a year and a half by the time by the time 5.2 goes end of life. And it would be nice to A, cut the number of versions we're supporting, and B, get on track with the kind of forward-looking Python support policy that I think we're being recommended to follow. So that's the main reason. The sort of second one is we have this kind of gap between LTS versions, where people kind of get stuck on an LTS and they can't easily upgrade from 5.2 to 6.0 because 6.0 isn't an LTS. So they wait all the way till 6.2, which means that there's this kind of, we have this drop off when the old LTS goes end of life. We have people that are, so the people that are currently on 4.2 when 6.0 is released. So now, in April, 4.2 will go end of life, and people will be like, oh, I'm still on the old LTS. I'm meant to start updating. And that takes almost the entire LTS cycle to get people on to, say, 5.2, just as 5.2 goes end of life. And it would be nice if every version was an LTS version. So there's, I've got a proposal for that. And then the third bit was the Calver bit, is to just make it clearer what the version numbers come to. So we've talked on this podcast a million times about how, you know, when 6.0 comes out, people are like, well, it's not really a breaking change. It's not because it sounds as if it's semantic version. It's like a new major version, but it's not. It's just a continuation of Django's rolling releases. So I put an email out about that a couple of months ago, and I will write that up over the new year period and present that and see if we can get some agreement on progressing that, so that perhaps for the 7.0 period, that might be Django 28.
Yeah.
And there's a Django forum post that we'll link to from you, Carlton, with a lot of discussion as well. 48 messages.
Yeah. And on top of everything that Carlton's saying, from the point of view of maintainers, we will also get a little bit more breathing room if we have one feature version per year.
Yeah. Well, if something comes out in 2026, it's 26.0 or .1. I think it makes all the sense in the world.
But like as well, the idea with that as well, that every version would have exactly 3 years of support. And so if it's Python, if it's Django 26, well, you know it's supported till 29. And if it's Django 27, it's supported till 30. If it's 28, it's supported till 31, etc. I think that would give people a bit more clarity as to what version they're on and when they need to act.
I mean, that's what PyCharm does, for example. There's three releases a year. We just had our third one, so it's 2025.3. Next year will be 2026.1. It gets helpful.
Yeah. And Ubuntu does it, and other people. It's not, you know, it's not novel. It's
Natalia, is there anything you want to add while you have a microphone and the ears of the community? I know you've said a lot already.
But it's for like for the 6.0 release or something
or
more
anything. Anything. No, don't talk about that.
Open floor. Go
that's
on.
Boring. No, just about being a fellow, just personally. I mean, I'm constantly struck by the fact that fellows, you know, people use Django and assume it comes from somewhere indeterminate. And at the end of the day, it's fellows, it's people you called out doing the work, you know, there's real people doing hidden work to make all this happen. And
right. Yeah, that's key. I wanted to say something along those lines in that the DSF, the Django Software Foundation, pay 1.5% right now in order to ensure that Django is maintained. But we can't possibly do everything. There is no time, and we don't have the energy nor the time to do everything that is needed. So Django is what it is today because of the effort of and the contribution from a lot of volunteers. The paid persons, the fellows, we try to the best that we can with those efforts. We try to provide support, to try to provide reviews or advice or execute the bits that other people cannot execute. But I'm finding myself more and more overwhelmed with the amount of things that are coming our way. And without the help of the volunteers, I don't think that we could keep up. I mean, we're not even keeping up, but we're keeping up with priorities. We're not keeping up with everything. But I think the involvement of contributors and volunteers is key. And I think that Django is what it is because of that, but needs a lot more of that to continue being an excellent web framework. We're struggling a lot, as I mentioned already, with LLM results, which are low quality, unreviewed, but they're taking a lot of time. So that's also an open thing that I don't have any answers nor any concrete proposals yet, but it's also that we are struggling a lot with. So if I can ask anything, is to please people to review what you're sending to open source in general, because it's consuming a lot of time from maintainers. Yeah, I think that's the core.
I think when you were talking there, like that, it seems that people think either Django sort of comes out of nowhere and they have no idea where it comes from, or they think there's some massive corporate entity with a massive team and like lots of resources. The bottom line is 1.5 full time people paid to work on it. There's very little resource, and I think it's important to keep that in mind as well.
No notes on my end. Well, Natalia, thank you for taking the time. I know just before this, you had an ops meeting and just all the things you and Jacob and Sarah juggle. It's so impressive, and Django wouldn't be what it is without, especially the fellows. So thank you for your work and not going insane managing everything. I appreciate
it. But you don't know if I haven't gone insane.
Well, publicly,
I'm still not sure when it may be.
We'll have notes to everything. Everyone, check out 6.0, give feedback. And thank you again, Natalia, for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoy.
All right. We'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode was sponsored by Hacksoft, your Django development partner beyond code. Learn more about their services in the link in the description.